Welcome to Luma Digest. I'm Noura. Right, so today we're starting with a story that made me check my own dependencies and then check them again. Late March, routine Tuesday morning. Developers around the world typed npm install into their terminals. Nothing unusual. Except this time, for a few hours, that command installed malware on thousands of machines. The package was Axios, one of the most trusted libraries in JavaScript, 100 million downloads a week. The attackers didn't exploit some obscure vulnerability. They compromised the maintainer's account, published malicious versions, and because npm runs post-install scripts by default, the malicious code just executed. No confirmation, no warning, just ran. Think about that for a second. You installed a library you've been using for years, from a maintainer you trust, and that one action gave attackers access to your machine. The attack worked because of two things. First, dependency resolution happens invisibly. You specify a version range, npm picks what to install. Second, those post-install scripts, they're meant for legitimate setup tasks, downloading binaries, building native modules, but they run with your permissions, and most developers never question them. Here's the bit that really got me. Log files don't solve this. They control what gets installed, but they don't control what's allowed to run. The malicious version was a valid update within the version range. The log file did its job, and the attack still worked. So what actually stops this? PNPM version 10 introduced something clever. Script safeguards. You can declare which packages are allowed to run scripts. Everything else gets blocked. It's not about trusting NPM. It's about deciding explicitly what you trust to execute code on your machine. The takeaway? Supply chain security isn't about scanning for vulnerabilities after the fact. It's about controlling execution before it happens. You can't just trust what you've already trusted. Worth having a conversation about with your team this week. What's running when you type install? Do you actually know? Right. Completely different corner of the tech world now. But stay with me. There's a shift happening in how companies are actually deploying AI. And it's not what the hype cycle would have you believe. Autonomous agents, self-running systems, AI that makes decisions without human input. That's the narrative. But when you look at what enterprises are actually building, they're going the other direction. They want control, not autonomy. S&P Global Market Intelligence built tools that pull insights from financial documents and earnings transcripts. AI-powered. But here's the thing. Every result stays anchored to verified source material. The AI can't generate conclusions that aren't directly traceable. Why? Because in finance, an error isn't just embarrassing, it's legally consequential. Or take this developer who built a code review pipeline using three specialized agents, Lint Checker, Semantic Analyzer, Synthesis Engine. Each one does one thing, they pass context between stages, but they don't share state. No agent can override another. And the whole system caught 94% of issues in 30 seconds instead of 4 hours, with 60% fewer false positives. The pattern is the same everywhere. Companies want AI that assists and explains, not AI that acts independently. When the stakes are real, when errors carry financial risk or legal liability, human accountability matters more than speed. What this really means is that the boring, controlled, explain-your-reasoning version of AI is the one that's actually getting deployed. The autonomous agent hype, still mostly hype. Something to think about if you're building AI tools. Are you optimizing for autonomy or for control? Okay, so this next one properly surprised me. Kepler Communications just deployed 40 GPUs in Earth orbit as a functioning compute cluster. Not a demo, not a proof of concept, an actual operational service. And they've already got their first customer, Sophia Space. Now, why would you do compute in space? Three reasons. One, edge computing at the actual edge. If your sensors are in orbit, processing data up there means no latency from ground transmission. Two, power. Solar works really well when there's no atmosphere. And three, thermal management. Space is cold. Really cold. Cooling GPUs is easy when you're radiating into the void. The interesting bit isn't the hardware. It's that someone looked at the economics and said, yeah, this makes sense. We'll run inference in orbit and sell it as a service. I mean, think about what that enables. Real-time satellite image analysis, onboard AI for spacecraft navigation. Processing that happens before the data ever reaches the ground. Is this the future of edge computing? I don't know yet, but the fact that it's operational, not theoretical, that tells you something about where the barriers are dropping. Right, let's talk quantum, because there's been some genuinely clever work happening. Researchers demonstrated qubit reset using a phononic bath. Now, that probably sounds like jargon. Let me unpack it. In quantum computing, you need to reset qubits to a known state before every operation. It's like clearing a calculator before a new sum. The traditional method? Wait for the qubit to decay naturally, or use measurement-based reset. Both work, but neither is particularly clean. This new approach uses sound, specifically, an acoustic resonator that's physically colder than the qubit. The qubit couples to the resonator, heat flows from hot to cold, and the qubit ends up in its ground state, reliably, with residual excited state populations below 10 to the minus 4. That's a 1-2 order of magnitude improvement, which matters because initialization quality cascades through every quantum algorithm. If your starting state is noisy, everything downstream inherits that noise. The clever bit? They're using a physically separate system for cooling. The phononic bath doesn't interfere with the qubit during computation. It's only there for reset. That separation is what makes it practical. Bottom line, boring infrastructure work like this? This is what makes quantum computing actually usable. Not flashier, not faster, just more reliable. And one more quantum story, because this one connects to something we've been watching, dilated RNN wave functions. These are neural network architectures designed to approximate quantum states. The challenge has always been long-range correlations, quantum systems where distant particles are entangled. Conventional RNN struggle with that. Transformers handle it, but they're computationally expensive. Dilated RNNs do something clever. They skip connections. Not every layer talks to the next layer. Some layers skip ahead. That lets the network capture long-range patterns without the transformer overhead. And researchers just showed they can accurately approximate one-dimensional cluster states. Those are highly entangled, geometrically complex, the kind of thing conventional architectures fall apart on. Why does this matter? Because simulating quantum systems is expensive. If neural networks can approximate quantum states efficiently, that changes what you can study, what you can predict, what you can optimize. It's early. But it's the kind of work that quietly enables everything else. So, stepping back from all of that, here's what I keep coming back to. Security isn't about trust, it's about verification. Control. Explicit decisions about what runs and when. AI isn't racing toward autonomy. It's being shaped by the people who need to explain their decisions. And quantum progress? It's not coming from breakthroughs. It's coming from infrastructure, from reset protocols and neural approximations and all the boring bits that make the flashy stuff actually work. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Links in the show notes.